Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Coach Kelly here.
She's back.
Yay!
It's always good to see your face. It's so funny because we almost missed our cue to turn on the mic.
We were totally talking. I'm like, my cue.
Oh my gosh. Kelly, as we were starting here, you were sharing that you had a miserable night last night.
Horrible. And it's like perfect to talk about because that's to do with parenting too,
exactly.
Which is our topic today. My five-year-old woke us up at 10:30, threw up four times. And I have a huge phobia of vomit. I mean, like, so bad that I'm going to go see a hypnotherapist. So he throws up, but then he's okay today. And of course, he was like a sportscaster telling me the details about last night. I'm like, okay, I'm good. Thanks. Like, he's like going over the highlights.
The color
like,
of it.
I was like, no, please. Like, he has no idea that I have this phobia. So he's fine. He wants to stay home from school. I'm like, all right, fine. We'll have like a cute mommy Sunday. We go to Starbucks. I do some errands. And then I get a call that my younger son is now sick and has 100-degree fever. So we might be doing deja vu tonight.
Oh, I'm not looking for it.
I know. It's horrible.
Tell me about this phobia of vomiting, because most of the time when there's a phobia of something, there's some sort of trauma in younger life that happened.
That can make total sense. My brother used to get migraines and throw up all the time. And one time a therapist said to me, well, do you think it has to do with the fact that he got all that attention because, you know, he threw up? And I'm like, no, it's not that. It just, I don't know. There was something. I mean, obviously it's not pleasant, but it's like, it's the smell. It's like the sound. It's like everything. And it's not so much a phobia that I will throw up. It's more of like that person throwing up or another person throwing up. I feel so powerless. That's like kind of what it feels like for me.
So powerlessness, and when you say phobia, like deathly afraid of it?
Yes. Literally, like he's throwing up last night and I had to like leave the room.
Aww.
I mean, this is my son, you know? And I'm like, oh my God. You know, like I'm like telling my husband, like he knows, you know, he's fully equipped. He like knows I can't handle it. So like literally I felt so bad. And then like my son wanted we let him watch TV downstairs and he's like, okay, will you carry me back upstairs? And I was so anxious.
No.
I was terrified and I couldn't do it.
Oh.
And I was like, because of like, and it's scary when you have such a phobia that it literally paralyzes you that you can't, you know? So yeah.
Poor thing.
So it's
for
pretty,
both of you, right? Because I
yes.
know how much you love your
oh my
boys
God.
And you love to nurture them.
Yes.
And nourish them.
And I'm like stuck. It's frightening. So hopefully, you know, the hypnotherapist will help me in some way.
And
know.
Does David have an iron stomach?
His stomach is like a fishing net. So we'll see what happens in the next day or two with that guy. But
the actual vomiting of the kids is
you
not.
You know what he said? I couldn't believe it. He's like, Kelly, it was pretty bad. Like he was like, he's usually like, whatever, I could handle it. And he was like, it was really bad. And I'm like, yeah.
But it's not uncommon for people to be around vomiting. That's
yes.
a great topic, right? We won't say that too many times.
Yeah.
And to also have the impulse to
yes,
also
exactly.
want to,
yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's common.
Ugh.
The gag reflex, right?
It's disgusting.
And you may also have a heightened sense of smell.
Yes.
Do you tend to
I mean, not typically,
sensitive?
But I don't know. I really want to figure out, like, what's at the core of this. Like, why is this, you know, so paralyzing for me? But
well, I will be very curious to find out if the hypnotherapy
yeah.
should be able to help that.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect
I think so. Yeah.
therapeutic modality
exactly.
for that.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, in general, I get really anxious when my kids are sick, too. So I think I'll throw that in there, too. Get
two
for one.
But not throw it up. You'll throw it in without throwing it up.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
All right, let's change the topic.
We may have turned off half of our
exactly,
now. They
exactly.
May be all saying, why do we want to listen to this? But if yeah. you are still listening, and we hope you are, you are listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly. And remember, we love your emails. We also love your phone calls. So please do give us a call at 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. We're actually decided to do a show today about parenting and
yes.
maybe like a three-parter. So you have plenty.
Absolutely.
Gather up your questions over the next couple weeks.
Sure.
And you can call us about anything or email us about anything, but we are going to tend to stay focused on the little munchkins today.
Well, right? And it's perfect because I have two little ones, 5 and 2, and then Dr. Deborah has a 22. Yes, so it's like it's a perfect mix.
And I have my nieces in between. Actually, my older niece, who is 26, and then my younger niece, who is 19.
Yeah.
And then I also was a co-parent to another person's child as she was raised, growing up.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah, I have a fair amount
of
mothering experience.
And I've worked with a lot of adolescents, too. So we got you covered here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so do give us a call or send us your emails. But we want to also recap. Last week, we had a fabulous show with our friend and colleague Jack Nelson-Saul.
He's so nice.
He was so amazing. So if you guys missed that show, please tune in and go listen to that, and along with any of our other shows that are downloadable. But it was very special to have him here in studio, and such a compassionate guy.
Oh, you know, you can tell.
So funny.
Yes.
I go to lunch with him. He's so funny.
Yeah.
But he really knows his stuff, and he's really good at it.
Yeah, and you can just tell he really cares. Like, he loves his job and he really cares. I remember his saying that I think this was his second career, and it just feels like he should have been born to do this, you know? Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
He's a great guy.
Really great guy.
That's right. So, all right, parenting. You know, that's such a great topic all the time, because so much anxiety in our community anyway about being a good parent.
Yes.
You know, we have this old version of parenting was spare the rod, spoil the child, right?
Yes.
You didn't even have child abuse regulations or laws years back.
Wow.
You know, you could paddle your kids anywhere you wanted in public, however you wanted to do it, and no one would stop you. It's like kids were your property.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
Were your right to do with as you please. And then with some of the religious teachings of spare the rod, spoil the child. You don't want to have a overindulged, out of control child. So, if you have to beat them, whip them, punish them, you know, it was just all...
par for the course.
So I'm so happy that we've had so much more conscientiousness around parenting. But sometimes I get a little concerned that the milieu or the climate of parenting now is so obsessed with being perfect, you know, perfect parenting.
Yes.
And then it turns into this competition
among
moms and dads. And it's just, that's a little bit frightening.
I think also that helicopter parenting, where you're just sort of like hovering over the child, or versus, I think, you know, when I was growing up, I mean, obviously it's a different world today. It's a little bit not as safe, but I remember, you know, I would just go outside, play till dinner, you know, see ya. Like, I would just kind of run around my neighborhood. I remember just going on my bike and, like, you know, going to friend's house, and then it was like, all right, great, I'll be back by dinner. Like, that was it. Like, my mom didn't, you know, freak out or worry. And I feel like with our generation, with the kids today, it's like, I just don't see that happening at all. Like, I think, I mean, you just can't let your kids, like, go in the neighborhood and, like, see in 3 hours, good luck, you know. It's
certainly
amazing.
Not in the city areas.
Yes.
I would imagine Midwest somewhere, or
maybe in Montana
on a farmland.
Yeah, exactly.
All that kind of stuff. But me too, I used to love the freedom of being able to get up and go.
Yeah.
I mean, there weren't even answering machines when I was a tiny little munchkin,
know.
So, and then they came around, but certainly not cell phones or the ability to stay connected to parents. We used to have to call in on payphones now and again, though.
Yes.
So we would be at the mall with the friends.
Sure.
And then something around noon or 2 o'clock, just
I
at
did
least
that.
Give an update.
Yeah. I remember showing my son a payphone, and he's like, what's that?
What
like, he
that?
Couldn't even understand, like...
You can't even find payphones now.
I've seen some that are like, the phone isn't even there. It's just like the shell
box.
Of it. Yeah, it's like so funny.
And they actually used to have the phone booths.
Yes.
Not just the little
standalone remember those?
Things.
Oh,
yes,
my God.
You walk in and you close yourself. That's why they're so much fun to see in old movies.
Movies, yes, exactly. I used to love Adventures in Babysitting. They had like a scene in there. It's just so funny.
If anyone listening is in a town where... You still have phone booths
that
you can stop and call people from. Please give us a call.
I know, I'm so curious.
I really want to hear about that.
Me too. I'm really curious. Yeah.
I wonder what they even charge for them now.
It was 25 cents when I was growing up. It's probably at least 50, I would say, now. I know they have them still in airports, no?
I don't know. Maybe.
Oh, really?
I'll have to look the next time we go. Maybe so. I mean, everybody doesn't have a cell phone.
I know. It's true. Well, especially if you're traveling internationally, you might not work or something like that. So I feel like airports would be good for that. But I don't know. Maybe they don't even do that anymore.
I used to go down to Mexico a lot on vacation because it was quick and easy to get there and relatively inexpensive. And they had payphones, but to call from there to the States was something like $27 for 3 minutes.
It was absolutely crazy.
So you had to call collect.
Yeah.
You know, and then it was much less, but it was very strange. But
it's very funny. My dad is a lawyer and he worked for this client who was like owned a gas station, and the gas station guy couldn't pay him, and so he said, look, you have free gas for life, basically. And this was like back when I was in high school, so my dad's like, all right, good deal, you know, he'll pay me back. My dad won the case for him, so he was like really grateful. And so I would then get gas, but I remember I was going in college and I would just, you know, get the payphone, the cards.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. And so everything was free. So I got the payphone cards for free. And so I would just kind of, you know, store those puppies up. But it is kind of funny how different it is.
So what do you think is the right age for a child to get a
cell phone? This is a great question. I've asked other parents. I think it's funny. I know kids who are young as like 6 or 7 who have one. And that to me is insane. I feel like to me, the right age is probably 12. What do you think? You're probably better,
somewhere around there. I think it's probably case specific or family specific.
Yeah.
Clearly, if there's, let's see. I think the law is that you can't leave a child at home unattended without an adult under 10 years old.
Right.
I believe it's 10.
Yeah. Is it 10?
But
yeah.
Some 10-year-olds I would never leave alone. And, you know, some 9-year-olds I'd feel comfortable.
Exactly.
Alone, at least for a little while or during the day. So it depends on their responsibility level. But I think that if a child is left in some, at the age at which they are left alone without other adult supervision, even for a small period of time, if there isn't a landline, then I think that having a cell phone
makes sense.
Would be in order.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah? Like if a parent, latchkey kids, right?
Yes.
If a parent's gone.
Exactly.
They have to come home and do their homework.
Yes.
They've been dropped off from a bus or something like that. Or if they're in areas where they're not going to be completely supervised, like maybe even a child who has to take the bus.
Yes, exactly.
Something could happen maybe from walking to the bus stop home. I think those kinds of things. And just for safety reasons, and I would say with a very, very, very limited plan.
Yeah,
really
of course.
Just for emergencies.
Just basics.
Only.
Yeah, exactly.
The idea of having an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old running around with a cell phone and using that and chatting and playing games. And
it's so funny. My 5-year-old asked me, he's like, can I get a phone? I'm like, who are you going to call? I'm like, who are you going to call? One of your kindergarten friends? Like, he's like, well, no, I want to play games. Like, he just wants to play the
games
on the phone, you know? So, but it is kind of funny. But I remember wanting to get my own phone line in my house. Talk about we're going back today. But like, and I got it at 10, and that felt really old to me.
Your own
my own phone
at
line
10.
At 10. But I shared it with my brother, and the reason is because my mom was a talker, and so you know she was always on the phone, and then I wanted to be on the phone, so it was kind of easier for her too. It was like, great, get your own line. I don't have to deal with you know people calling for you, and it was great. So we shared it. That felt old to me.
Okay, I think my sister and I got one when I was probably, I'm guessing, 12.
Okay.
She would have been about 14,
yeah.
I think that.
Yeah.
But our phone line was great because our phone number was 888-8892, our private line.
Yeah.
Well, the high school's phone number was 888-8920.
Oh, my God.
So when we were in high school, we would routinely get parents or kids who were calling in sick.
I'm dying.
Yes, we were not always that good.
I was figuring you probably had the blast with that. Like,
most of the time, I would tell them, I'm sorry, but you have the wrong number. We're one number off, and just please call the school yourself. But, you know, that time when I was cranky or maybe I was homesick. And
somebody
would be calling, and I'd say, all right, got it. Thank you. Child's name.
Oh, my
but
God.
But then I would feel terrible.
Of
because,
course.
Because, you know, once you start to really realize the impact of that behavior on somebody. You know, that's another show sometimes to do one on pranks.
Yes.
You know,
oh, my God. My husband's like the king.
King of pranks.
Yes.
Any April Fools?
Oh my God! You know what? I got him with April Fools because you know we went away last week. That's when I called in, and so on April Fools we were already away, and I pretended that you know my dad texted me because my parents were taking care of our kids, and he's like, "What? What happened?" I'm like, "I don't know. Let me call him back." So I pretended to call him back, and I'm like, "What, Dad? Are you serious? Like, you want us to come back?" no, you can't handle it. And David's like, why, what, what? Oh. I'm like, we got to go back. Like, you know, he's just, he's getting overwhelmed is the word I use. He's like, overwhelmed? Your dad? Like, it was really funny. And then finally, I'm like, April Fool's. He's like, oh, man, it was really funny.
That's a good one.
But he is, I should have him on one time to talk about his pranks. I mean, like the king, like serious, Mr. like prankster. Amazing. Yeah. But almost like doesn't feel bad about it at all, which is kind of funny. I have that guilty conscience, like, oh, I don't want it. I don't want to hurt. I can't like have it last too long. Like he could literally do jokes for so long that he doesn't even tell the people it's been like 5 years, you know, like wow. He's still, yeah, he has a friend. This is really funny, from grad school, who, he changed his number. And so the guy doesn't know, you know, who's texting him, and he'll be like, the guy's named Marat, and he'll be like, hi Marat, remember me? And Marat would like write back and be like, who is this? And then like 6 months later, he'd like do it again, like, Marat, last night was so nice. And then like Marat would be like, who is this? 6 months later, he'd do it again. Like literally, he'll be like, you know, like he's got like an eternal clock. He'd be like, up, time to call Marat. Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's really funny. But yeah, he loves that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Sadly, I think I like instilled like terror in my daughter around pranks. For some reason, I had a lot of anxiety about that when she was younger. Like somehow,
oh, really?
She would do a prank that would turn into a disaster.
Oh,
you know, like the,
yes,
you know that somebody, she would teepee somebody's house and that tree would catch on fire.
Yes,
and then the house would catch on fire. It would be her fault,
right?
Or you know, you call what was a common prank when I was growing up? Was you call and you order a pizza that you didn't order and you send it to somebody else's house?
Yeah.
Now they're smart. They charge you
right beforehand
on the telephone.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like, oh well, what if somebody was starving and they didn't get their pizza?
Yeah.
I mean, I was just get really worried about that.
That's hilarious.
It is hilarious. I actually, she listens to the show sometimes, but I'm going to have to specifically call her and make amends for that, that it's okay to joke around. But I really do. I think I went overboard on that. I was just so afraid that, because I think at the time I had either read something or heard something in the news about somebody who had done a prank.
And then,
awry.
I knew a guy in my class, and then we'll go back to the parenting, but a guy in my high school who, for the senior prank, he glued all the doors shut in the school, like super glued them with another person, and he got suspended, and his parents like almost disowned him. I mean, it was really, really bad. You know, he came from a culture where like that was not accepted, and it was like, you know, it was big time. So it was serious. I mean, so it's like you think, oh, this is funny, and da da da, and then it's like, oh wait, hold on, this could be really, really have serious consequences.
That just reminded me of, I was in eighth grade, so I would have been 13, right?
Uh-huh.
In an honors history class. And I was considered a very well-liked student in school. Like, the teachers really liked me. I was a good kid. But I definitely had a little bit of my dark side.
Sure.
So I had a book of matches. And so with my best friend in the back, Susie, and I said, what if we just light a match?
Oh.
Right? Silly, right? Just ridiculous. Lit a match, blew it out.
No.
And then the teacher said, it smells like gasoline in here.
Oh, God.
They had a full-fledged fire drill. It was terrible.
And they never knew it was you?
No. I still, to this day, if there's some place I have to go do some
amends.
Confession or amends or something.
Yeah.
I mean, I was so scared.
Oh, my God.
I was so scared because you do this one tiny thing. This probably, this maybe is why I was so nervous.
Yes,
about my
exactly.
Daughter, because
sure.
Now that I think about it, what a great tie. And thank
yes.
you. Thank you, Coach Kelly, for the therapeutic connection.
Right, exactly.
I was terrified. The entire school had to go line up outside, and they had to go, I think they even called the fire
department my God.
To make sure that there wasn't a gas leak. And
this
all for one match. Terrible.
Well, I'll bring this back to our topic today because that reminds me of my son. When he was two, my older one, when he was two, we went to a hamburger place and he thought it would be hilarious. I mean, he's two, to pull the fire alarm.
Oh.
You know, the things on the wall.
Yes.
So the whole strip mall had to evacuate.
Oh, no.
The fire trucks come. And I was mortified because, like, he was just such an impulsive. I mean, he still is, but he was such an impulsive kid that it was like, oh, that looks fun. You know, pull it down. So, so I've definitely been there with the parenting stuff for sure with little kids and the impulsivity.
Yeah. Oh, so this is all about that. So, when, let's go back to like young ones, infants.
Sure.
There was something that my pediatrician said when Tiffany was an infant.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I was all, you know, kind of nervous because I definitely did not have the best parenting.
Yes.
My parents. And they didn't know how. They just didn't know. They were immigrants, et cetera.
Yeah.
Came from a different style and a different model. And so I was not going to apply most of that kind of parenting to my daughter. But I also didn't want to be overly indulgent and, you know, create a monster, which many people have done these days, right? So anyway, he said something to me that I thought was just magnificent. He goes, you cannot spoil an infant.
Yes.
You cannot.
It's true.
Nothing you can do. You cannot overindulge.
Yes.
You cannot overget. It just can't be done.
Yeah.
So if you need to cuddle with your child to soothe your child longer, if she needs to be fed 8 times a day because she was just a little tiny eater. She'd eat a little and then be done. Eat a little and then be done. So if that's what needed to happen, if she can't sleep through the night and you need to wake up, so it's your job to just be there round the clock for her every morning.
Yeah.
And then slowly but surely instilling the sense of that there is structure, there is some boundaries, but to really do that. So in your generation, still the same
pretty much model. Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, but I think it's definitely more overindulgent with going beyond. I think a lot of parents, it's I don't know what it is. I'm trying to figure it out. I think that like my parents' generation, it was like very parent-centered, and it was like, it was really all about my parents. Like they wanted. I remember on weekends we would go antiquing. We would go to like antique places, and my brother and I were like bored to tears. Like it really wasn't like, oh hey, do you guys want to go to the park today, or do you want to go to an amusement park, or like what do you want to do? It was just
as you do for your children now, right? You never take them to an antique.
Never. And like you know, it was like if they wanted to go to a restaurant like late at night, like we would just tag along, didn't matter, you know, like that was just sort of, it was just really about the parents, and the kids were the accessory. And I feel like it's very opposite today. It's very child-centered, and it's very, and like you were saying, maybe even too much, but it's,
I think too much, well, at least again, I have a biased view because most of the couples who come to see me, they're coming to see me because their relationship isn't working. I'm not talking to all the couples out there whose relationships are working.
Yeah.
That's one of the number one biggest problems is that they've allowed their children to rule the roost completely.
Yes.
So that they actually have no power.
Right.
They don't even they're allowed to say no or to do anything to make their own plans. I mean, I have this one family that I'm working with, the parents, and basically he's so attentive to the kids, like nonstop, that she's ready to divorce him because she says, there's no me.
There's no me
in this relationship. Whereas we started as an adult couple. Mm-hmm. So she's actually erred on the other side. And so she doesn't almost, she almost like resents her children.
Because she's not getting what,
because she doesn't get any attention. And he can't see it. What do you mean? These are our kids.
Yeah.
We have to do everything for them. It'll only be time limited, you know, but that time leads to more time,
Sure.
Then, I think we had a emailer a couple weeks ago that talked about how his wife never felt satisfied with her parenting.
Oh, right. Exactly. Yes.
Then she was jealous because he got more.
Yeah, that was the caller. Exactly. Yes.
The caller. Yes.
Yes, exactly. Fair. Yeah.
So I think that's a common problem.
Sure.
And I think there's a real difference between infancy and toddlerhood.
Yes.
And that's such a critical period of being able to set loving, constructive limits for a child so that they know that they are in the safe confines and that somebody else is in charge.
100% agree. I think they need that structure. They like the boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
I think parents are a lot of times afraid to say no. I think it's either out of fear that they won't be loved and accepted, and it's like, and I think it's also a fear of the kid's going to have an outburst and doesn't want to deal with that. There's multiple reasons, but I think it's so important for the kids to have boundaries and rules and know what to expect. They need that structure, even though they might not seem like they like it. They need it. Absolutely.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Dr. Deborah
and Coach Kelly,
and we love to hear from you. So please give us a call at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815, or give us an email anytime. And we're talking about parenting. We're kind of all over the map, but we're covering a lot of stuff about, you know, what it's like. It's funny, as you were just talking, I was thinking about, I think I gave Tiffany, my daughter, way too many choices to the point where at some time, I think it just overwhelmed her. And I remember being out to lunch with a friend of mine, and he looked at me because she and I were battling over what she was going to order for lunch. And she just was like, I don't know, Mommy. I don't know, Mommy. I don't know, Mommy. I don't know, Mommy. And I would, of course, she was a little bit obstinate too. I would suggest two or three things that I would know that she would like. And she would say, no, I don't want that. No, I don't want that. So it just felt like a naysaying
battle.
No battle. He just looks at me and he says, you know, I love you, Deborah. You're a great friend, but you know what? You got to stop this. She's going to make her crazy. Yeah. Pick something for her. Just pick it.
Oh, interesting.
Now, he was actually not a parent himself, but it's funny how somebody, this compassionate person, therapist, worked a lot, had, you know, nieces and nephews. But, you know, sometimes it's somebody on the outside that can look in and just see the dynamic crystal clear and say, she's giving her so many mixed messages.
Yeah.
So it seemed like from that point on, I would basically say she would have 3 minutes to pick something that she would want to order. And if she couldn't pick, I'd just say, I'm going to pick for you.
Right.
And you know what? The battle stopped.
Wow.
It was amazing.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah.
Now she probably hates me for half the things I picked because she's a little Miss Health Nut.
That's so
she's
funny.
Like, Mom, how could you have ever made me eat that?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I didn't make you eat it. I had to pick something.
Right, exactly.
Mostly they were good choices. I was actually accused of, she would come home and she would say, there's never any food in the house when she was a teenager.
Aww.
There's nothing here. And I'm telling you, the cabinets were full.
Stocked.
The refrigerator was full. But what was it full?
Healthy.
Vegetables, fruits.
This is my fear. My kids.
And she would look at that and say, there's nothing to eat.
This is going to be my kids in like 5-10 years. Like, I can hear it because I'm the health nut, and it's just going to be. And my younger one, I think I told you, is like a sugar addict. He's like obsessed. So I'm going to be totally screwed. Like, he literally will be like searching in the refrigerator. He's 2.5, and he will try to find anything with like some sugar in it. And
did you bring them any of the pastries from Solvang?
Oh, no, I didn't. You know what? Because we were going to be away for like 2 days.
Did you see them though?
I did see them. They look so good.
Oh my God. They're really terrible.
Yeah, exactly. But this is going to be my kids. But you know what? We just got an email that I think is relevant. Maybe we should...
Sure, yeah. That's part of what inspired us for the show.
Okay, cool. Okay. Dear hosts, I'm so glad you're doing a show on parenting. I have a 2-year-old who is just horrible. I don't mean horrible like bad horrible. I completely love my little girl.
Bad horrible. Good one.
I love it. I completely relate. But lately, she's been doing everything she can to do to defy and annoy me. I know this is common for a 2-year-old, so I know I'm not alone, but that doesn't make it any easier for me to handle it. My parents were very strict and sometimes, quite frankly, abusive, and I certainly don't want to repeat that style of parenting. My husband works full-time, and I work part-time, so she's in daycare a couple hours a week. It seems that she becomes the most unruly for the first couple hours after I pick her up from daycare when my husband is not home yet. Any suggestions on how to manage my little adorable, please? Also, how do I manage myself? Signed, Lion Tamer. Oh my God, I so can relate to this.
Oh my. Well, yes, of course. I'm glad that she recognizes that she's not alone and totally understand that that doesn't make it any easier because in the end of the day, she's
still
got to
be
best to deal with. I wish she had said a few more specific behavioral things because sometimes, you know, what a child is doing in terms of their defiance and acting out is representative of a different issue than something else. Like
a child
who bites and hits may be expressing something different than a child who just stubbornly sits in the corner and won't do what you're asking, which reminds me of my daughter. When I'd take her on walks when she was 2, when she didn't want to walk anymore, she would squat down and she'd blow up her cheeks like a blowfish.
Oh my God, this is so funny.
And she wouldn't say a word. She would just look at me with these big, like somehow she thought if she made her cheeks bigger, wouldn't be able to pick her up.
This is hilarious. Smart. You could tell she was smart at that age. I mean,
very smart.
That's funny.
Very, very self-minded, very individualistic, which was amazing, right? But, and I'm also glad that this woman has a sense of humor, right?
Yes, exactly.
Adorable,
but you need
horrible,
it.
Not bad, horrible. So, I think that probably the first place to start is to pay attention to what happens at the daycare.
Yes.
She's saying that if the child, it could be that the child still needs a nap and maybe they're not strict on enforcing that by the time she gets home. Maybe they're feeding them snacks that are not sitting well. Maybe there's too much stimulation in the environment and then coming home to just mom and that's maybe the child is bored. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
So my thoughts are, I think a lot of times kids may really miss their mom or dad. It makes sense. They've been away. And so it's really hard when you typically pick up your kids after daycare. You get home, you want to put your bags down, you got to cook dinner. It's a very chaotic time. And what I've noticed is if I just give my child like 15 minutes of undivided attention playing with them, it goes a long way because then they feel connected. Then you can get dinner, you know, going and things like that. But I've noticed that sometimes they just need that connection. And it's hard when you come home. I mean, I know how it is. Like you come home from work, you pick up your kid, you're like all frazzled. You got to get the, you know, dinner made and everything like that. Dogs barking. Like it's just a very chaotic time. But even, you know, 10 minutes, just carving that out really helps for the kid to feel a little bit more connected.
That is a great suggestion. I really like that because it does sound like maybe that disruption in mm-hmm. the connection. Because 2 years old is very young.
Yes.
I know people do put their babies in daycare also. But if we don't know also how long the child's been in daycare, if this is a new transition, if mommy going back to work is a new transition.
Right. It's very true.
Back to work right away. But I like that. It sounds like they're on both ends that would be helpful. Maybe if mom could actually... be in route to daycare maybe 10 minutes earlier or 15 minutes earlier, even if it costs a little bit more to keep the child there, so she can have some sort of detox time herself
before
she picks up her child and really work with her own like inner meditation.
I was thinking put on the meditation on the radio, something that 10 minutes on the way to pick her up to just sort of, you know, feel like she can kind of de-stress a little bit.
And get into that mindset you're talking about. I'm going to be there just for my daughter at this moment.
You know, exactly.
Just for 15 minutes, half an hour even, if possible. And maybe even engaging the husband later on in some of the tasks that might need to get done that maybe he could pick up.
Sure.
Or having a little bit of transition time where that each parent gets a little bit of individual time with the child.
Yep. Very smart. Yeah, I think this is definitely doable. And the good news is it's always a phase. I mean, that's the thing about kids, which I've learned. It's always a phase and it will get better. It might get, you know, a different issue, but this one will get better. So that's the good news about that.
I agree.
That.
Yes. Just when you think that you cannot handle it anymore, you want to give them away, they change.
I literally had said that I wanted to sell one of my kids on Craigslist, and I kind of was really serious about it at one point. I mean, you get so overwhelmed. You're like, come on. But then it's true. And then it's like, it kind of phases out. It's like, God's like, all right, I know you're at that limit. I'll help you. And things get a little bit easier.
I think, too, that sometimes parents are a little bit too frantic about this. Like, I don't want my kid to have any television or any that, to the point where they just overwhelm themselves because they don't have a breather. You know,
I think
if you find the right program or the right something that does occupy your child, even though it's not perfect interactive parenting,
exactly,
it gives your child a sense of, you know, being distracted and attentive to something else. It gives you a little bit of room to do something. And I'm not talking about plopping a kid down in front of the television for hours on hours on end so you can go off and do your own thing. But really, it's okay sometimes to not be perfect, you know,
true.
Your kid is not going to get so screwed up. It's, again, it's what program are you going to be?
Well, I'm amazed when I see parents and are like, yeah, we don't give our kids TV or iPad. And I'm like, my immediate thought is like, not like, oh, that's so great, good for you, hippie mom. Like, I'm like, how the hell do you do it?
Yes.
Like, are your kids angels? Like, are they real? Are they aliens? Like, because that just wouldn't fly. Like, my kids, like, yeah, I need it for my sanity. They need a little bit of downtime, too. Mm-hmm. Like, that's something else I realized. Like, I kind of was, like, not scheduling my kids a lot, but, like, there was just a lot going on all the time. And it was, like, it was good for them to just sort of chill out for a half hour for both of us. So I totally agree with that.
And finding what that niche is for your own child, because children, like adults, have different things that appeal to them. So it might be that just playing music for a child might be very soothing.
That's true.
You know, just getting them energetically interested in just, you know, some sort of soothing connection of some sort.
Sure. I think that's a great piece of advice, because I know a lot of kids are very musical too, and that's really helpful.
And while this child is a little bit on the young side, somewhere about 3 or 4, it's really great to enlist your children into your activities that you're doing around the house.
Yes.
Because they're very industrious at that age.
Yes.
And they actually do like to have projects. So whereas mom may be a perfectionist and she wants her floors swept perfectly, get a little broom and sweeper thing for your child and have them do that alongside with you. So what if there's a couple extra crumbs that stay there? You're getting your child engaged in something that then feels like a fun thing, so that later on when you ask them to pick up more around the house, it's more like a game than it is a chore they have to earn money for.
Yeah, you know? And they have a good experience from it, you know, with the start. Yeah, that makes sense.
Had one more suggestion as well. Is scheduling our tasks can sometimes be very overwhelming when we have young ones, as you know.
Yes.
And by the end of the day, you're probably exhausted, right?
Beyond.
You don't want to do anything. But maybe for even this woman here, if she spent 10 or 15 minutes the night before prepping for whatever that is that she has to do when she picks her up from daycare, may actually save a lot more aggravation.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. Let's think of some other things that mom can do, because mom's saying also, you know what, how do I manage myself? Like, one thing is, I think, to really stay focused on deep breathing.
Yes.
And to pay attention to, this moment is not the do and die end of the world.
I once read an article from Julianne Margulies. She was a new mom at the time, and she had to get on set the next morning. She had an infant. She was so completely stressed out. The baby wouldn't sleep. She was like having that vicious cycle of like, I'm only going to get 5 hours of sleep. And then it was like the baby's still up. And she's like, I'm only going to get 4 hours. And she was just so panicked and anxious. And she called her mom, and her mom said, this moment will pass. And it was like, you know, it was kind of her aha moment she talked about. I think it was in Oprah magazine. But it's so true. It's sometimes I think we can get in that catastrophic thinking of like, oh, my God. You know, and it's like you just, you know, you have to remember that it's a finite moment. It's intense, but it will pass. Mm-hmm. And we keep having to remind ourselves, you know, of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's talk about, since we have a two-year-old here on the table.
Yeah.
And you have a two-year-old, yes, and a five-year-old.
Yes.
What are you finding is the best boundary setting that you do? Like, it used to be timeouts.
Right.
Used to be, or the yes, corner, the chair and the corner,
sure,
and all
exactly
that. So what are you finding works
it's
best?
It's so funny. You know, I've been reading a lot about time-ins. There, a couple people don't feel strongly about timeouts. Timeouts didn't work so well with my older one. I think he got even more riled up. He wouldn't really sit. It was just very... it was hard. So I was reading a lot about time-ins, where you're just basically giving the kids some, like, chill-out time. Because usually I realize, like, with my kids, if they're, like, really riled up or, like, hysterical, something else is going on. And they need some sort of attention in another area. Like, yes, he's misbehaving, but, like, what else is really going on? Like, a perfect example is yesterday, my five-year-old had a complete and total meltdown. I mean, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, it was, like, 1,000. Like, he was, like, hysterically crying and, like, couldn't control it. I mean, he even said to me, like, I can't calm down. Like, he was just, like, so, you know, and he was just, like, you know, running around and kind of throwing himself. And I'm like, what is going on? You know, and so it's like, you know, maybe a normal parent might be like, you better get it together. You know, you're screaming and you're making a mess or whatever. And I kind of knew like something else was going on. So I kind of, you know, took him aside. I'm like, what else is going on? We tried to do some deep breathing, didn't go over so well, but end up later that night, he was sick. And so it just sort of makes sense. But I think a lot of parents like the time in because it just kind of gives her, you know, it's not so punishing. It's sort of like, hey, sounds like you're at a level that you can't control. Like, let's have some chill out time. So turning on some music, just sort of, you know, having them sit in maybe this time in space, but it's not, you know, it's like a beanbag. It's not like a punishing area where they kind of need to chill out.
I love that. When my daughter was younger, we didn't have that concept. It was time out.
Yeah.
That was the method of choice. And it was horrible.
Yes.
It was horrible
yes.
for her. It was horrible for me. She even said to me when she was a little bit older, she says, you know what the worst thing is that you ever did to me?
And oh,
I said,
God.
What's that? Yeah. Time out.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh, I get it. I know. I felt so wrong in doing mm-hmm. it. We didn't do it all that much, thankfully.
Yeah.
But I found that what worked so much better with her was when she was that upset, I would say, okay, so whatever we're doing right now, you're just not ready for.
Yes.
She's not ready to do
yes.
what it is that we're doing. I get that.
Yeah.
I'm not always ready to
yeah.
do what I'm asked.
Exactly.
It's asked of me to be done. And then it worked best for me to go, in this case, into her room with her.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, wait, we're getting a caller.
We have a call. Hello, welcome to our show.
Hi, you're on live with Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly. Hello.
Hi, I'm looking for Tracy.
Tracy?
Yes.
I think you probably have the wrong number. We're on LA Talk Radio. We're talking about parenting or any other questions. Do you have any questions for us?
No. I appreciate you taking my call. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Bye-bye. Well, we wonder if he was a parent.
Exactly.
He could have gotten free advice.
Yeah, exactly.
It's silly. Anybody, if you call and you then get shy, just ask us a question.
Sure.
We'll help you out.
Exactly. We can pretend to be Tracy, you know.
We can be Tracy. What's she like? That's a different show, Kelly.
Exactly.
Coach Kelly. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so actually sitting in with her to just sort
yeah.
of soothe and be with her was what worked the best. So,
exactly. I've noticed yeah. the same thing.
One thing I would say to parents out there, you know, try multiple things. Don't just go by the book
yes.
that you read that says
yes.
what you should do and shouldn't do. Because just when we think we understand it all, 10 years later, somebody comes out and says that was all wrong.
Yes.
So, you know.
Well, I completely agree with you. And I feel like, especially like as a mom, I need to go with that mother's instinct and what feels right. And that to me has sort of been one of the biggest lessons of parenting, is really going with my gut and my intuition. I remember when my older one was an infant, I like was convinced he had thrush. And I don't know, he just was off, and I could tell, and I was kind of reading up on it.
Why don't you define that for our listeners?
Oh, I'm sorry. So it's a yeast, because I was breastfeeding, and it's like a yeast in the mouth, and they can kind of just be off and different things, and you can have like a white coating on the tongue. And so I thought, oh my God, you know, I bet he has this. And so we started in a new pediatrician's office, and my husband took him, and my husband comes back and says, oh, they said he doesn't have it. And I said, what? I like, couldn't believe it. And he's like, she checked everything. And so I called her back. I said, are you positive he doesn't have thrush? And she got offended. And she said, I've been in practice for 37 years. I've seen all different kinds of kids. He does not have it. And I wouldn't let it go. I'm like, David, that's it. We're going to go to another pediatrician. I went to another pediatrician the next day. She's like, oh, yeah, he has got thrush. Like, wow. I just knew. Like, it was like, I don't know. A mother just knows. There was no other explanation. And I just feel like you just got to go with what feels right. And there are a lot of different parenting methods and styles. And I just think it has to resonate in your heart. That's really, you know, what I believe.
Wow, I'm so glad you ended up listening to your
intuition. Yes, isn't that funny?
Treatment for that. What was
the treatment was? So I'm kind of a naturalist. So it was called Jensen Violet. It's like a herb that comes in a liquid and it's really purple. So the babies have like purple lips because you put it around your breast because they're breastfeeding, and somehow I guess it kills all that bacteria. And that's what worked. Wow. And he was fine. But isn't that crazy? Yeah. So I just knew. Yeah.
That's the lesson here, right?
Yes.
You can read about stuff. People can talk about it.
Yes.
You know, you always have somebody down the street who knows it all.
Yes.
Going to tell you, this is what you have to do.
Yeah. Well, and I realized, too, at that point, that you've got to be your child's advocate, especially when they're an infant. You know, like, and here's an expert, but I think if something's really, like, not sitting with you right, you just, yeah, you got to fight for your kid and what you believe.
So did you call the first pediatrician back?
Yes, I totally did. I mean, it was her. It was like a nurse practitioner, I think, so it wasn't actually the pediatrician. But when I called back, I said, I'm so sorry, I'm leaving your practice. And she said, why? And I told her the whole story. And, you know, she didn't get defensive. She just said, okay. And that was kind of it, you know. But I did want to just say, like,
I'm surprised that she didn't say, please go get another opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
To begin with, right?
100%. Yep. Well, she was so cocky about it. It was like,
with all this anxiety.
Yeah.
And how many mothers wouldn't have gone to another?
It's just amazing to me.
That
100%. Well, this expert said he doesn't have it, you know, but I just knew. I there was no other way I could explain it. It was kind of crazy. Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Did you go through any postpartum depression?
I did not. Actually, I'm sorry. I did for one day, the baby blues, I guess they call it, if it's, you know, not significant. There was one day I remember. So I had a baby nurse that came with us and she stayed for a little while. And it was the day that she was leaving. And I think it was like the idea of like, oh, my God, like now I'm on my own. You know, I had this support. I had this help. And now she's gone. And wow, like this little being, it's all my responsibility. And it was so terrifying. But I think it was also just the hormones. But I remember I couldn't stop crying. It was so scary. Like I felt like, and I think I was more embarrassed in front of my husband. Like I was scared that he was going to get so worried. So I didn't want to cry so much in front of him. Like it wasn't like the embarrassment of just crying, but I was more worried that he was going to freak out. So I said to him, like, listen, please don't freak out. I'm going to be crying probably the whole day. Like, just so you know. And he was like, okay. And he was like sweet about it, but thank God it just lasted one day. But I do know a lot of women who went through it, and it is very intense and really difficult. And,
remember when Brooke Shields came out and said, and then
Tom Cruise
came out and told her that it's not real?
Exactly.
You know, that's really, really tragic, because depression, postpartum, seasonal, any kind of depression, it's very real. And it is one of the most darkest mental illnesses around because nobody that doesn't have it understands it.
Completely. Like, you feel so isolated.
It, right? Just snap out of it.
Yes.
So, and
yeah.
Especially, I mean, if you are in that stage, if you feel any of those feelings, get professional help. Seek somebody who's passionate and understanding about
yes.
that because it can ruin your bonding experience with your child because you don't even feel like bonding.
Of course.
Sometimes.
When it's good to just even express those feelings and realize you're not alone. I think it's such an isolating thought, especially when you see all these new moms cooing over the baby. And if you don't feel that, it can feel so shameful. So it is good to seek professional help just to, you know, get that validation. Like, you're not alone. There is help. You know, there's definitely resources available. There's drugs available to help you just get through that stretch. But it is. It's a lot in your body. I mean, a lot of changes, a lot of hormones. There's a lot going on.
Absolutely. Sometimes I wonder if my mom had postpartum. Never was anything talked about. But she certainly, in hindsight, went through periods of depression.
Really?
Now look at it. It was never discussed. I mean, getting any kind of psychological help in my family was not permitted.
Yeah.
I mean, the way I got into therapy was by deciding to become a psychologist because you have to go through therapy, so they had to pay for it.
That's amazing.
But I mean, all the times I asked as a teenager to go to therapy and said, what are you, crazy? Yes, I am.
Yeah, exactly. Please. I need it.
But I know they were afraid because at that time, you know, families would get exposed and there was a lot of dark stuff that nobody wanted exposed. But I do wonder if sometimes she went through some sort of depression. And my dad, too. I mean, it would make sense with the lives that they had.
Of course, from what you told me.
Yeah. And my mom's family was pretty dark. I mean, her mom was very depressed. Her father was a very severe alcoholic.
Wow.
She was completely unparented as a child. I mean, she was basically running her own show at 15.
Oh, my God.
Making her own living, I think, by the time she was 16.
Wow.
As a model. So, So I'm sure she went through a lot of that. But feelings were not talked about. So
we are
highly recommending that if you have any of these experiences and feelings, please talk about them, share them with others, find out what is going on. You know?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%.
What's your opinion on going back to work and staying home? Because, boy, that's been an age-old
dilemma. Hard topic.
I mean, at one point, I mean, any mother who wanted to work was just seen as like the scum of the
barrel.
Right,
exactly.
Right? Just like, you are the lowest. Yeah. You would want to be away from your child. And then it was almost like this, how could you want to be an at-home mom?
Yes.
And so what's your thinking about that?
Honestly, and without sounding too diplomatic, but I really believe this. I think it's really all about what the mom needs. You know, and some moms love being stay-at-home moms. That's what they want to do. They feel comfortable. They're happy. And, you know, like, I think that's wonderful. And I think other moms, like, I think that they just, you know, that it's just not for them. And if they're going to be depressed and, you know, upset or, you know, get short with their kids, then it's like, that's not good either. So I think you've got to do what's right for you. I mean, I feel so blessed because, you know, I work part time. And so I think I kind of feel like I get the best of both worlds. And so that's really, really nice. And so, you know, to me, that feels like the perfect amount of balance. But, you know, I think it's just whatever works for that mom. What's your thought?
Balance. That's the key. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the balance for the kids' needs as well?
Because it's true.
Some children have more special needs than others.
That's
and they
true.
Can tolerate. Some children can tolerate much longer separations than others.
Yes.
So it's really about what's going to work and what works in the family system. If there is a spouse, is there another?
Yeah.
Is there a husband? Is there a co-partner, a significant other?
Right.
Are there other relatives around? Because I really, really strongly believe in community parenting.
Yes.
So much so that I just wish that the world would embrace that again.
I love when you say that.
Work to create more of that.
100%.
You know, like, I mean, even just on a small scale, at my 3 doors down, there's our neighbors who have these 3 girls. And since they were, you know, before even the youngest one was born, they started coming over to the house. And we would play with, like, we'd pick flowers or do some gardening or do whatever. And I know the mom appreciates it so much because they know that they have a safe space that they can just pop in. And I get to say, today's not a good day or now's not a good day. But just yesterday, the older one, she was... She's 12 years old, and she knocks on the door, and Christopher was home, and she says, "Is Deborah home? Can she play?" like, and I happened to be home. I was, you know, I had about an hour of time, so, you know, I had come back from my exercise, and I was doing my stretching. She just sat on the floor with me, played with the cats. We talked about things. One of my little kitties took a little nibble on her, and she started to cry. She goes, "I'm not crying because it hurts. I'm just hormonal."
This is hilarious. That is so cute. I love her.
Cute. She says, "I'm just having hormones."
I got to meet her.
She is. They're so. The three of them together. The little blonde, adorable girls.
So cute.
I guess it's 12, 10, and 5 or 12, 9. 12, 9, and 5. Yeah.
That's oh my gosh. So cute. So I don't even know what I would do with girls because I'm so used to boys.
I can't believe we've run out of time.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
But we have so much more to talk about.
Yes.
So for next week, anybody, please give us a call at 323-203-0815. Send us your emails this week. Coach Kelly has stuff on her website and go ahead.
Sure. It's www.kellykellimiller.com. And my book is Professor Kelly's Guide to Finding a Husband. You can get that on Amazon.
And please visit my website at drdebraonline.com, drdebraonline.com. And I have several books out, Healing the Sensitive Heart, Your Boss is Not Your Mother, Don't Call Me a Drama Queen, Dump That Chump.
I love it.
Da-da-da-da-da.
All the names are fantastic.
I do like my titles.
It's great.
I'm the title queen.
I love it. It's fantastic. So next week, we're going to be talking about parenting adolescents. Sounds great.
And anywhere in between,
yes,
on either end, if you've got more questions. Thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to you next week.
Goodbye.
You're listening to the Dr. Debra and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.